A Katra Podcast Conversations. For the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Look around you, or maybe look at yourself. Mm-hmm. What are you right now? I mean, your collection of numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
A credit score, a weight, maybe a step count, a blood pressure reading.
And a salary, a performance review metric.
Exactly. We are just constantly being measured, and we implicitly trust these numbers to define our reality.
And that implicit trust is precisely what we're here to challenge today. We are diving into David J. Hand's book, Measurement.
And our mission really is to shake the belief that the numbers governing your life, you know, from global GDP to your cholesterol, are some kind of objective fact just waiting to be discovered.
Yeah, they're not.
And this is where it gets really interesting for you, our curious listener. Hand argues that measurement isn't a discovery at all. It's an invention.
An invention.
It's the language we create to model reality.
Mm.
And in a world that is so saturated by AI, by big data and algorithms, making these huge decisions based on metrics we can't even see, understanding how those numbers are made is, well, it's no longer optional.
Sure.
It's become essential literacy.
To guide us through this landscape, this world of objective-seeming numbers and hidden human choices, we really need a true authority.
And David J. Hand is exactly that.
He is. He's a highly respected statistician, a professor emeritus at Imperial College London, and a former president of the Royal Statistical Society. I mean, his academic pedigree is just massive.
But the thing that makes him the perfect guide for this deep dive isn't just the math, is it? It's his practical experience.
Right.
His perspective is so unique because he didn't just stay in the university. He spent decades consulting in these really complex fields like finance, healthcare, policy development.
Which is crucial because he understands the entire data pipeline. He hasn't just designed these, you know, elegant statistical models in a vacuum.
No.
He has seen firsthand how a perfectly good mathematical idea can become, well, tragic or even catastrophic when it's built on a poorly defined or misunderstood metric.
So he's seen flawed models lead to disaster.
Absolutely. Whether it's in risk assessment for lending or even medical diagnosis, he is perfectly positioned to reveal the perils of, let's call it, thoughtless quantification.
Okay, so let's get right to the core idea. What is Hand's definition of measurement?
He calls it the disciplined assignment of numbers to properties according to a well-defined rule.
Hmm. Sounds simple enough. But I'm guessing that word assignment is doing a lot of work there.
It's everything. We are the ones assigning the number. We are building a numerical model to simplify these really complex things.
And this is the grand reveal of the book, then?
This is it. Measurement appears objective, but it is fundamentally subjective. It's value-laden. The paradox is that to get that appearance of objectivity, we first have to make a whole series of human choices.
Choices about what, though?
Choices about what to measure in the first place, how to measure it, and what values are embedded in that very definition.
Okay, give me an example.
Think about measuring quality of life. The second we define that with metrics like, say, income or crime rate or access to green space,
right,
we are making a subjective judgment about what parts of life truly matter. Measurement is a human construct. It's designed to impose order on complexity.
So the book's purpose for you, the listener, is really a transformation.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to take you from being a passive recipient of numbers to becoming an active, critical evaluator, someone who's always ready to question the assumptions and the values that are hiding inside the numbers that shape our world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's start with the hard foundation. Hand begins with something called the representational theory of measurement.
Yes, this is the bedrock idea. It means the numerical structure we assign has to reflect the empirical structure of the thing we're measuring.
In simple terms.
Well, if object A is longer than object B in the real world, then the number we assign to A has to be bigger than the number for B. The math has to mirror reality.
Okay, makes sense.
And this leads us directly to the four critical measurement scales. These scales basically tell you what kind of math-like adding or averaging you're allowed to do.
And if you get it wrong,
you generate total statistical nonsense.
Give us an example of that nonsense. Let's start with the simplest one, the nominal scale.
Okay. Nominal uses numbers just as labels. Think of jersey numbers on a sports team. Player 10, player 20, player 30.
Right.
The numbers are just arbitrary labels. You could never average them and say that player 20 is the average player. That would be meaningless.
It violates the rule.
The numbers only tell you different or same, nothing more.
Then you move up to ordinal, where we finally get some order, like movie ratings, 1 5-stars, or small, medium, large?
Exactly. We know that large is more than medium, but, and this is key with ordinal scales, you don't know the distance between the ranks.
What do you mean?
The difference in quality between the number one and number two movie on the list might be huge, but the difference between 9 and 10 could be tiny. You can't really add them or average them meaningfully.
Ah, okay. And this is where I think most people get into trouble. Confusing interval and ratio scales.
Yes.
So temperature in Celsius, that's an interval scale.
Right. The intervals are equal. The gap between 10 and 20 degrees is the same as the gap between 30 and 40. But because there's no true meaningful zero.
0 degrees doesn't mean the total absence of heat.
Precisely. So you can't use ratios. You cannot say that 20 degrees Celsius is twice as hot as 10 degrees. It's just not true.
But if you measure money, that's a ratio scale.
That's a ratio scale, yeah. Because ratio scales like height, weight, or income do have a true zero. $0 means no money.
So with money, you can say that $40,000 is twice as much as $20,000.
You absolutely can. It seems like a subtle difference, but mixing those two up is a super common path to deeply flawed conclusions in policy and business. Now, if measuring temperature requires that much discipline, just imagine trying to measure abstract concepts.
Right.
This is where we shift into psychometrics. The attempt to measure latent constructs, things you can't see directly, like intelligence or anxiety or happiness.
So we have to measure them indirectly.
Right.
Through surveys or observing behaviors. And I'm guessing the quality of those measurements depends on two key things.
Absolutely. Two pillars. First, reliability. Is the measurement consistent? If you take a test today and again tomorrow, do you get roughly the same result?
Okay. Consistency.
And the second and much harder is validity. Are you actually measuring what you think you're measuring?
The controversies around IQ testing feel like a perfect example of that validity problem.
A textbook case.
Is that number really measuring some kind of general intelligence, or is it just measuring cultural knowledge or access to good education or even just how good you are at taking tests?
Exactly. The number is real, but what it represents is constantly up for debate.
And that concern scales up hugely when we look at social metrics. Like the gross domestic product, GDP.
Ah, GDP, the king of economic metrics. And it's profoundly flawed because of the choices that are baked right into its design.
It measures economic production, sure, but it focuses on market transactions, so it just completely excludes huge parts of human activity.
Precisely. GDP ignores volunteer work. It ignores household labor, all this economically valuable activity that doesn't happen in the formal market.
Then worse.
Yeah. And crucially, it treats things like cleaning up an oil spill as a positive for GDP because it generates economic activity without subtracting the original environmental damage. The number reflects the values of old school industrial economists, not modern ideas of well-being.
Okay, now this is where it gets really practical for anyone listening who makes decisions.
Yeah.
The insight known as Goodhart's Law.
Yes. The principle is, when a measure becomes a target, it ceases to be a good measure.
It's a feedback loop, isn't it?
It's a dynamic feedback loop. The moment you make a metric a target, people will game the system to hit that number, and that often undermines the whole point of the original goal.
Let's use the university rankings example.
Perfect. A university wants to climb the rankings, and the system uses, say, graduate employment rates as a key metric.
So instead of, you know, actually improving teaching or the curriculum.
Right. Instead of doing the hard work, the university might start using perverse incentives. They could fund temporary low-wage jobs for recent grads who would otherwise be unemployed.
Just long enough to get them counted as employed when the ranking data is collected.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The employment metric goes up, but the quality of education hasn't improved one bit. They've just optimized for the number.
We also need to remember that even in the physical world, our standards are just human conventions. Hand tells this great story about the international prototype kilogram, Le Grand K.
Oh, I love this. It was literally a small cylinder of platinum iridium metal kept in a vault in Paris. For decades, the weight of that one single object defined what a kilogram was for the entire planet.
That's kind of terrifying if it lost a few atoms.
The whole system shifted. It just shows that even our most fundamental units were based on a human agreement about a physical thing.
And the modern effort to redefine the kilogram based on Planck's constant, this universal unchanging number, is just a better version of that agreement.
It's still a convention, just a much more stable one.
And finally, the essential truth for anyone who deals with data: all measurements contain error.
All of them. Measurement is never perfect.
And I know there are two main types of error. So if my bathroom scale always says I'm 10 pounds heavier than I am, what is that?
That's systematic error or bias. It's consistent. You could probably fix it by recalibrating the scale.
Okay. And the other type?
Is random error. That's the unpredictable fluctuation, the tiny differences you get if you weigh yourself 5 times in a row, just natural variation.
So a proper measurement is actually incomplete without one essential piece of information.
Yes. A measurement without a statement of its uncertainty is, as Hans says, a form of fiction.
It's not a single point.
It should never be a single point. It's a range of plausible values. When a poll says a candidate is ahead by 2 points with a 3-point margin of error, the real answer isn't they're ahead.
It's we don't know for sure.
Right. It's they could be tied or even behind. That uncertainty statement is just intellectual honesty.
Uh-huh.
So let's try to synthesize 3 core ideas from Hans' work that you can use like right now to think more critically.
Okay. Number one.
The subjectivity of objectivity. You have to challenge that belief that numbers are neutral. Always ask, whose priorities and biases are built into this metric?
Number two.
Remember that measurement shapes reality. These systems aren't passive. They are active tools that change our behavior through incentives. If you don't measure something, it basically becomes invisible to the system.
Like if your company only measures hours worked, but not creative output.
People will focus on hours, not creativity. Simple as that.
And the third big idea.
Avoid the error of reification.
Which is a fancy word for.
For mistaking the measurement, the map, for the complex reality, the territory. Your credit score is a risk model. It's not a measure of your personal worth or your character. It's just a model, and all models are simplifications.
So the big advice is, always look behind the number to the human choices that created it. Hand is so good at boiling these complex ideas down into these maxims that just stick with you.
He really is. One of my favorites, which is all about accountability, is the danger is not that we measure too much, but that we measure thoughtlessly.
I like that. It shifts the blame from the act of measuring to our lack of critical thinking about it.
And then there's the one that drives home that statistical honesty we talked about. A measurement without a statement of its uncertainty is a form of fiction.
Yeah. If someone gives you a number as an absolute fact with no margin of error, you have permission to be skeptical.
You have an obligation to be skeptical. And finally, there's this one. Every measurement system creates its own version of reality.
It reminds us that every metric we use, whether it's school test scores or carbon footprints, creates a specific way of seeing the world. And it also creates blind spots. Okay, let's bring this down to real life. When you look at your fitness tracker or your lab results, you have to understand that those readings are just estimates. They have variability.
Right. Your number today might be a bit lower than yesterday just due to random error.
So don't let a single anxiety-inducing data point throw you off. Look for the trends over time.
And professionally, if you're ever designing KPIs, key performance indicators for your team, you have to use Goodhart's Law before you launch.
You have to think ahead.
Anticipate how people might game the system and build in checks and balances against that from the very beginning. And when you're consuming news, always question the definitions. Who exactly is being defined as unemployed or poor or homeless?
I think the most valuable lesson we can take from Hans' work is that being truly literate with numbers isn't just about interpreting data.
No, it's not.
It's about having the wisdom to understand the system, the biases, and the human values that are hiding behind the numbers.
And that leads to the final, really provocative insight of the book. Measurement, at its core, is a tool. And because biased measurement systems so often reinforce existing social inequality.
And criminal justice, healthcare, finance.
Everywhere, designing equitable metrics is actually a crucial civic act. We have to use our knowledge of measurement not just to understand the world, but to actively work towards making it a fairer one.
A fascinating and absolutely vital lesson for navigating our very, very measured world. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.